Living in Atlanta in the late 1970s, early 80s, we heard this question every night.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?
Do you know where your children are? And the reason that TV news started broadcasting that question every night was many people didn't know where their children were. Kids were disappearing. Their bodies would turn up in the woods, strangled. Between 1979 and 1981, at least 28 black children and young adults were killed in Atlanta. The Atlanta child murders. They're the focus of the true crime podcast, Atlanta Monster. And the creators of that podcast, Payne Lindsay and Donald Albright, join me now. Welcome to you both.
Hey, how you doing?
Thanks for having us.
I was a kid in Atlanta then. I was 8 or 9 years old, so the same age as some of the kids who were disappearing. And I remember the fear that gripped Atlanta in those years. For those who don't know the story, I wonder if you would just recap briefly what started happening in 1979.
It started with African-American kids just going missing. And the police had no idea what was going on. They didn't know if it was a serial killer or if there was any pattern to this at all. But as the numbers grew, the community in Atlanta became very paranoid and started lobbying for the government to do something about this.
We are paying people to maintain the safety of the streets of the city of Atlanta. If the safety of the city of Atlanta is not maintained, then the people that we are hiring to do that job need to be looked at carefully. If that job is not done, then we need to look towards why we are paying people not to do a job.
And as about 2 years went by, the number was near 30 African-American kids who had turned up murdered. And so all the law enforcement agencies were on this hunt for this mysterious serial killer. And the entire city and really the nation was on high alert.
And I mean, part of the, you know, uncertainty as this started unfolding was disagreement over whether this was a serial killer or not, what exactly was happening. I mean, even some of the parents weren't quite sure what to make of this situation.
Yeah, I mean, there was up to, I think, at least 14 victims. They still weren't sure that this was a serial killer or that these were even pattern cases. So the FBI got involved after 14 children had been missing. Some had already been found murdered.
St. Anthony's Church was crowded with Patrick Baldazar's family, his friends, and classmates. The shock of his disappearance 10 days ago had barely sunk in when they learned Friday that his body had been found. Patrick's fellow fifth graders sat quietly, attentively, wondering why their friend had been taken from them.
You know, a lot of back and forth. Ultimately, all the law enforcement organizations got involved. At the time, it was the largest task force ever assembled with over 400 agents. So, you know, it ended up getting the nation's attention and the attention of all authorities.
Yeah. And part of what your podcast focuses on in telling this story is how differently different neighborhoods and communities in Atlanta viewed what was going on. I mean, people in black neighborhoods, and we mentioned this was all the kids going missing were black, they saw this as city leaders and Atlanta police not stepping up to protect them. Is that right, Donald?
Yeah. So what I see is, you know, they looked at these kids and they said, okay, well, that kid is probably a runaway. That's what they say a lot of times when it's a poor black child that goes missing, probably a runaway, probably turned up in a week or two or went to his friend's house, no big deal. And then these kids were gone for long periods of time, and then bodies were, being discovered. And then it was the fight to get the deaths noticed. And it's just one of those things where I think people wish that it wasn't what it was, but the fact that these were victims that you could easily ignore, I think that played a lot into it.
Let me fast forward us to May 1981. By this point, there was a huge manhunt underway. Cops were staking out bridges crossing the Chattahoochee River. And I remember that so vividly because the Chattahoochee River runs right past my old school, our football field, backed up to it. And on this one particular evening, a police surveillance team is staking out a bridge right there, and they hear a big splash.
And I remember getting on the radio and asking, you know, what's going on? And all I heard was something about a splash. I had a 77 Ford LTD with a 400 big block in it, and I can tell you I scorched tires getting up there because I said something's happening and I just felt it.
They were at the bridge on the stakeout that night because they had been finding children's bodies in the river, is that right?
That is correct.
Okay, so that's the moment where they see Wayne Williams, the man who'd eventually be charged and convicted in connection with the child murders. What happened?
A police recruit heard a splash down there in the water by the bridge, and that was FBI Special Agent Mike McComas, and he was in charge of the bridge stakeouts in Atlanta. There was about 14, 15 bridges that were staking out for 30 days, and this recruit hears a loud splash, which he thinks is a body, shines his flashlight on the water, doesn't see anything, but sees ripples. They see a car up there on the bridge. They stop it, and then they find Wayne Williams, and you know, after that, they began to tail Wayne Williams and look into this guy. And
they didn't arrest him right away.
They didn't. Right. They let him go that night.
But 3 days later, the body of Nathaniel Cater was found about 500 yards downriver. So that's what clued them into that must, you know, they theorized that was the body that he dropped that night. And it wasn't long after that he was arrested.
Wayne Williams is an Atlantan born and bred, 23 years old, a product of the city's public school system. People who know Williams say he is a highly intelligent young man, a good student when he was in school.
All that said and done, he was convicted and sentenced in 1982, but that was for the murders of two young adults. They never actually tried him or anybody else in court for the children's deaths. Why not?
And that's the biggest question that surrounds this case is, if Wayne Williams is the Atlanta monster, is the Atlanta child murderer, then why was he only convicted of killing two adults? And that's how the families feel. That's how some people in the community feel. It just doesn't add up all the way.
And was part of it, he was arrested and the killing stopped?
That's one thing that the FBI kind of hangs their hat on, is that the killing stopped. Obviously, the killings didn't stop entirely. Unfortunately, there's been other kids who have been murdered since 1982. I think what they really mean is that the pattern cases decreased.
And it was a shaky pattern to begin with. Some of these kids had stab wounds. Some of them had genital mutilation. Some of them were beaten with objects. Some of them were just strangled. They were found in various places, various counties. So there's not a distinct pattern that you would think of, like when people who are accustomed to watching serial killer movies or hearing about these serial killer calling cards, there was nothing like that definitively tied Wayne Williams to all these victims.
It sounds like, having spent months and months investigating this, you two have more questions now than when you began.
Yeah, I mean, this case is so complicated, it's so convoluted, it's information everywhere, that sometimes, like you said, the more you dig, the more questions you have. But in that same process, you're answering some of the questions, too. I think that there's just so much gray area in this case. It's time for somebody, something, a project like this, to close the door on this thing. It's been way too long, and this, to me, is one of the last chances to do it.
Payne Lindsay and Donald Albright, creators of the true crime podcast Atlanta Monster. Thanks to you both.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks.